Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So again, another morning and another exciting conversation with another very popular translator on LinkedIn, at least, because I've been following her for quite a while. She has a podcast. She works in subtitling. She has a distinctive hair, as you can tell. And she works her way around the purple and pink tones very well. And so today we have Dot. I would just ask you to introduce yourself briefly, and then we talk about you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here. It's really nice. So as you said, my name is Dot, and I studied languages at undergrad and then did my master's in translation at Manchester, which is where I live now. And I started freelance translating in January 2019. And now I've sort of moved more into audiovisual translation. So now mostly what I do is subtitling and I translate from German and Dutch into English, and I create subtitles and subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing as well, mostly for like movies and TV shows and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of kind of what I do. And then I also just have my podcast as well that I host. It's called Meet the Translator. Mm-hmm. It's like my side project.
Mm-hmm. It's a big one, I would say. So I did look at your profile, and your master's was actually in translation and interpreting. So has the interpreting part been a part of your activities?
Well, the reason it's translation interpreting is because when I finished my undergrad, I was like, I was kind of interested to learn about interpreting. So I was like, oh, I'll pick a master's that has translation and interpreting. Mm-hmm. And then I went to do the master's and I didn't actually end up picking any of the interpreting modules. So I have zero experience in interpreting. It's just part of the name of my degree, but I didn't do any of those modules. So
I see. I thought that maybe it had happened for a while and then you just decided that it wasn't for you, or you didn't enjoy it or something.
No interpreting.
Okay, that's great. But what about the moment where you decided to actually study languages? So the original degree, what went through your mind, and why Dutch and German, right? So why those? Because I've been talking to a lot of people who are British and who have studied French, for example, or German, but the Dutch part hasn't happened yet. So why is Dutch in your life?
Well, I'll start with, like, I started learning German when I was about 12 at school. And I think, like, at least in the UK, when I was at school, French was kind of the main language that we all had to learn. And like, I did have to learn French, but I never really enjoyed it. I didn't like how like it was pronounced differently from how it was written a lot of the time. And I found that German was it's a lot more like, once you learn like the sounds of the letters and stuff, like it's, I found it a lot easier. And so I started doing that when I was 12 and then like carried it through school, and it was basically like my favorite subject at A levels. So I was like, when I was finishing school, I was like, right, what do I want to do? And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And one of my friends had worked as an au pair the previous summer, and she was like, why don't you do that? So I just like went to Germany for a year and lived in Berlin working as an au pair for a family to, like, I don't know, just experience like living in Germany, really. And then I kind of thought, maybe I want to do this at university, but I didn't want to do just German at university, because I was like, I want to be learning something else as well. But I also didn't want to make my life too difficult. So I was like, what is the easiest language that I could learn alongside German? Like, and I just went with Dutch because it's kind of like, so I'd say it's kind of somewhere, I mean, it's a Germanic language and it's somewhere kind of in between English and German. So I was like, this will probably be fine. So I mean, yeah, then sense. I did. so yeah, then I did, yeah, German and Dutch. And I think I applied to, when I was applying to universities, I applied for different language combinations at different universities, because I think, at least when I was doing it, there was only like three universities offering Dutch, and it wasn't that I absolutely had to do Dutch, it was more that I wanted to do something with it. And then I got accepted at Nottingham, and then yeah, so then I started learning Dutch there, and yeah, I'm really glad that I did that, because it's been interesting.
Yes, as a project manager, I worked a lot with Dutch projects, believe it or not. Yeah, and it's not so easy to find translators and all that. Not many people work with it. So I guess it's a really smart move. And if you enjoy it, that's perfect. So was it during college that you went to China?
Oh, when did I go to China? It was basically when I moved to Manchester to do my master's in translation. I again was like, I don't want to do just translation. Like, I want to add something else on there. I was like, I want to learn Mandarin. So like,
why not? Like, when you said that you had learned Dutch because it was a Germanic language and it was like in the same family as English and German, then I thought, so is the Chinese one, right?
I was like, let's have a challenge. Let's try and learn Mandarin. So like, yeah, when I came to Manchester, I was like, right, I want to learn Mandarin on the side. And there wasn't like an option to have it as part of my course. So I did like evening classes with the Confucius Institute, which were held at in my university building anyway. And then I think after like a year or something, there was like this opportunity to like go to Beijing for 2 weeks at Beijing Normal University and like have language classes, but also like do other things, like see the Great Wall of China and try out all these other different things. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like fun. So yeah, I applied to do that, and then got accepted and went there and had amazing time. I have since not really been continuing learning Mandarin, just because it's such a big it's quite a challenge. And I just can't prioritize doing that right now, but like I'm really glad that I did that, and like that I got that experience and got to learn a little bit. But definitely I'm not going to be adding that to my language combinations for translation anytime soon.
Ah, that's such a shame. Yeah, I understand. I mean, it's a whole different thing. I've also learned a few not so common languages for, you know, little months, periods of time. But I understand that it would take a lot more effort than most of the stuff that we have to learn. So what about subtitling? Was it during college that you thought that this was going to be ideal for you, or was it later? Did it come to you like by chance? How did the subtitling thing come to you?
So I kind of learned about it during my translation masters. There was a module in audiovisual translation, and that's where we kind of learned about it and learned how to use subtitling software. And I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't do that well in that module, but like I really, really enjoyed it. So I was like, I want to do this anyway. And I did my dissertation for my masters in audiovisual translation, and luckily I did quite a bit better in that. And so then I kind of was like, yeah, I want to do a bit more of this, but it's kind of hard to then get into like job wise. But I started off by doing some just English subtitles for a charity based down in Cornwall, and I just did that like on a volunteer basis, and that kind of gave me a little bit of experience. And then I started working with a subtitling agency, and then that built up my experience even more, and now like it just kind of went from there, and I got more and more subtitling clients. And yeah, I think it was always like something that I wanted to do. But when I started out, I was doing text translation because it felt kind of easier to get into, like to start with, I think.
Is there a lot of work from Dutch, I love this Dutch thing, into English for subtitling? Is that common?
Yeah. I think like it's because there aren't like there aren't loads of Dutch to English translators, and then like there's even less Dutch to English audiovisual translators that will do subtitling as well. So I get actually probably more work from Dutch to English than I do from German to English. I think with text translation, it was kind of half and half, because I think there is more, at least there was more, like there was more German into English work out there. But there are also a lot more German to English translators out there. So I think it was nice to have like the balance of like the one where there's more work and more people, and then the one where maybe less work, but there's less people to do it. But yeah, now I get more Dutch to English, but I also do a lot of just like closed captions or like English to English. So it's kind of, yeah, a mix.
So did you do some time? No, this is like in prison.
I did not go to prison.
No, I was going to say, did you end up going to an LSP for your practices, or that never happened and you went straight to freelancing and never had the experience of working for an LSP? Did you?
Yeah, I've never worked in-house. It's because when I did my master's, I did it part-time over 2.5 years. Mm. And halfway through that, I started freelancing. And so by the time I graduated, I'd already been like freelancing for a year. And so it was kind of working out all right. And then I just kind of went into doing that full-time. I'd thought about like working in-house, but like it didn't really make sense to me because I was already freelancing and it was going all right. So I just kind of carried on with that.
Yeah, makes sense. It's just that most people I know, of course, have started by working for a period, even if, you know, short period, but most of them worked for LSPs before they actually launched their own business. But you just went straight to it, right?
I'll just do this. We'll just see what happens.
And so when did you start your career on LinkedIn?
On
because
LinkedIn.
You're there quite a lot, right? How relevant has that been for success?
I think LinkedIn's been incredible. I think I started probably after I finished uni, because I'd like, even though I started freelancing like a year before, I was still studying alongside, and that was kind of taking up a lot of my time. And at that point I had like basically one main client that was giving me loads of work, so I wasn't feeling like I needed to go out and find more clients at that point. And then probably about a year, probably early like 2020, when I finished uni, so I had a bit more time to like do other things and look for other work. But then also that main client that I'd had suddenly started having less work for me, I think because of like the pandemic and a lot of things are happening, and I started to like panic a little bit, and I was like, okay, now I need to like actually be a bit more proactive with like putting myself out there and that kind of thing. And I think that's when I like got a bit more into LinkedIn, and yeah, it's just kind of carried it on. I'm not as like consistent with it as people like Kelsey are, like she manages to post every single day, and I just like, I'm a bit more like kind of, I'll post when I have thought of something that I want to talk about, or like sometimes I'll post every day for a bit, and then sometimes I won't have posted for a whole month. Like I just kind of, when I have the energy for it, I'll use LinkedIn. But I'm kind of not too hard on myself if I like I don't want to post things if I don't like, just for the sake of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I just don't always have ideas every day.
But you do go to a lot of, I mean, not a lot, but you do go to events, right? I guess I saw your photos in certain industry events. So you have a lot of that kind of around you, I suppose, right?
I mean, I only started that like last year. I think the first, well, I mean, I guess the first thing was I joined my local translation network, the Northwest Translators Network. Mm-hmm. And I think the first thing I ever went to was their wild swimming event. And I was really excited to go to like my first translation event. And it was like, we all got in a lake. And, like,
Okay.
It was a great, I actually think that was a really good shout because it was a really relaxed environment. I didn't have to worry too much about how I was going to dress or who was going to be there, what I was going to say to people. Cause it was like, well, we were in our swimming costumes and we were in a lake. So it was like, it was just a lot more like a relaxed way to kind of get to know other translators and stuff. And that was really good. And I started going to their like co-working sessions and more things with them. And then like my first sort of conference was actually the Cardiff Translation Unconference. So sort of a conference.
I'd love to go there. Just the name is just very inspiring. Oh, I'm like, so, oh.
It was so, yeah. So I went to that, their first one that they had last year. And I loved it so much. That was again, like a really nice way to like have a sort of conference experience, but in a much more relaxed way. And then after that, I went to the ITI conference in Brighton where I did a talk with Kelsey. And then that was kind of like the big, like, this is a full-on translation conference. Like, it's like, I don't know, felt a lot more like serious. I don't know. And now...
Sounds like it was.
Yeah. It was good fun, though. It was a lot more kind of like, I think, relaxed and friendly than I kind of thought it might be. I don't know. And then, yeah, this year I'm going to be going to the BP conference in Utrecht. So I try and like do, I think I'm aiming to do like one big conference a year because other than that, it gets a bit expensive. And also it's a lot of like, it's like a lot of energy, like, because they're often like 2 or 3 days in a row and it's constant like networking and all this, and I love it so much, but it takes up a lot of energy, I think.
But do you feel like it has an impact when you come back home and you go back to your social media and all of that? Do you feel like those conferences have an impact from either a networking point of view or a client point of view?
I think definitely, like, the networking is like is always amazing. Like, I always make so many new connections, but also a lot of the time, like, I'll have connected with people on LinkedIn and stuff, and then I go to a conference and I get to meet them in person, and I'll be like, oh, like, I've seen you like talking about this or something. And then you finally meet people in person, and it's really, really nice. And in terms of like a client perspective, it's hard to say exactly, because I feel like most of my work comes from like referrals for other translators. So sort of by connecting with other translators, then yeah, I guess I would get more work. Like, I guess the more people that know who you are and what you do, the more likely they are to think of you when something comes along, or like, I don't know, the more likely someone is to recommend you for something. So I guess they kind of go hand in hand, but I don't really make the connections with the thought like, oh, yes, this person might give me work. Like, it's more like, I just love doing it. And then it's kind of like a thing that comes along with it, which is quite nice and works well for me, because I don't really like applying to agencies or trying to, I don't know, send emails to potential clients and stuff. I'd rather like make friends with people and then see what happens.
So who are those clients? Are they in the UK? Are they from Europe? Are they big studios in the US? What kind of clients do you have? I mean, of course, there's more than one type, I suppose, but the majority of your work comes from clients from Europe, I suppose, given your language pairs, or not so much?
Sort of all over the place, because obviously, like, I work with quite a few subtitling agencies, and they're often based, like, I don't know, they'll have like a central hub and then they'll have all different languages. So they're not necessarily going to be based in Germany or the Netherlands. So like, I guess with the bigger agencies, they're sort of all over the place. And then with like more direct clients, then yeah, they might be in Belgium or the Netherlands or somewhere in Germany. So I think like it does vary. And I've had like clients in the UK as well, actually, that I've done like closed captions for. So I think like kind of everywhere, really.
Right. So the other thing that you do that really interests me is obviously the fact that you had a podcast, that you have a podcast, right? So, but apparently it already started, you know, a couple of years ago. So it's great to know that I have someone who knows more than I do so that I can ask questions. So let's talk a little bit about your motivation to start it and what happened there.
Okay, so, well, basically, I'd back in, yeah, it was in 2020, I'd worked on my website a lot, and I'd started a blog on my website, and I was thinking of like blog post ideas. And I had this idea to like talk to different translators and like find out about their experiences and that kind of thing as like a blog post series. And I was talking about it to my friend Chris, who was on my master's course with me, and he was like, that would be a great podcast idea. And I was like, And I was like, okay. And then I just kind of thought about it a bit more. And it took me a few months before I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this a podcast, because like, why not? Like, I think it was during, we had like lockdowns and all that kind of thing. And like, I was looking for ways to like network more with other translators anyway, that like, and obviously there wasn't all the like face-to-face stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, yeah, I'll just start a podcast. So I just did it, and the first episode was with Chris,
mm-hmm.
and about talking about doing a master's in translation and our course that we'd been on, and yeah, then it just kind of went from there, and I'm still doing it.
Yeah, you got me thinking now, because you told me just now that you do it only once a month. I say only because, as you know, I'm still learning, and maybe I would envision more than once a month for myself, as I told you before. But so give us a little bit of your motivation to do it once a month.
So I think I wanted to not give myself too much work, basically. Like, I wanted it to be something sustainable that I could do every month. And I think I really wanted to like dedicate, it was taking me quite a lot of time to like record an episode, edit an episode, like kind of do the whole thing anyway, and I was like, I don't know.
Yes, because this is really hard work.
it is hard work. And like, I started off like you are, like doing everything myself, and like it was yeah, it was a lot of work. And I was like, I think like, if I'm going to keep doing this and also still like running my own business, like I can't, like I can't
full-time podcasting, right?
Exactly. And it was kind of supposed to be like a nice fun thing that I enjoyed, and I didn't want to get to the point where I wasn't enjoying it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was like, I think I could be consistent with doing one a month, and that's like how I've carried on doing it. And I've skipped a few months like here and there, because I'm not really too hard on myself with it. I'm kind of like, well, if I need a break from it, I'll have a break from it. Like, no one really notices if I skip a month. So like, yeah, I just wanted, the main thing was just to make sure that I would still be enjoying it. And like, mm-hmm. thankfully, like, I am still really enjoying doing it. And I think if I was trying to do like one a week or something, I think it would become a bit stressful. Like, for me personally, like, I know we all can manage like different things, but like personally for me, I was like, I think this is like the amount I can do to keep myself enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked your perspective, and now you got me thinking, and that's it. No, just kidding. Thank you so much, Dot. That's been amazing. And now I'm going to go and listen to your podcast. And the name of the podcast is, let's say it more specifically so that everybody can go and check it out.
It's called Meet the Translator.
Meet the Translator. I love it. So that's what I also do. I try to meet translators and other professionals in our language business to talk to them about their profile and what they do and what their interests are and how they got here. So that's why I was really happy to invite you, and I was happy that you said yes. So thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed our conversation, now that I know it a little bit better. So I'll see you around, and we'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here. It's been really, really lovely getting to know you as well.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.